Mayor Ed Murray says that Seattle's parks are underfunded, and another short-term levy is not going to fix that. So he's proposing a new Seattle Parks District. This is a permanent taxing authority that would help fund the city's parks and community programs. The district would increase the property tax. At first, it's estimated it would cost the average homeowner about $14 a month. It would raise about double what the current parks levy is bringing in to pay for parks. A special citizens committee came up with a recommendation for a taxing district. After almost a year of review, the city council is now taking a look. If they approve it, it'll then go to voters. You'll get a chance to decide in August. Candace Damon advised the Seattle Citizens Committee on this proposal. She's a strategist who's helped cities around the U.S. create sustainable funding strategies for public space. We spoke this morning. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Ross.
Now, you've talked to other cities and worked with other cities at this juncture where they had an increasing shortfall in their parks funding. What did they do?
Well, there is greater interest in creating parks districts around the country because they provide the sustainable source of operating funding that also allows for equitable investment in parks across the system. Because the other approach to this, and what we're seeing more and more nationally, particularly as new park spaces get brought on, is exploration of a variety of public-private partnerships that can bring private money and public-private governance structures into the park systems. And those are arrangements that, in our experience, can work extremely well for signature parks, for parks that draw attendance and membership even, participation and recreation from folks across the region or even across the country and world. Those kinds of arrangements work less well for neighborhood parks. So I think as more and more cities experiment with these public-private regimes and create the great new parks of the 21st century, the High Lines and the Discovery Greens, they're great, but they don't solve the problem of deferred maintenance and operating deficits in neighborhood parks and recreation centers across cities, which is why the look to an annual re-up of a levy or dedicated public funding through a park district makes, I think, more sense on a long-term sustainable basis.
Because that pays for the nuts and bolts stuff that you're not going to get a private funder to jump in, which might be a flashier project.
I think that's right.
Would you give an example of how this has worked in a city that you've worked with where they created a park district? How did it turn out?
Well, the granddaddy, and I think probably the most successful park districts in the country, are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I would note that those are also places where the park system really brands the city. Minneapolis, in particular, is extraordinarily strongly associated with its park system, and it has had this park board in place for quite a long time, decades. And it is the model, I think, against which other park districts are measured and created. As I said, it is quite independent, and that has created some political challenges, I think, from time to time. But then it provides a model against which you can back away to provide greater accountability and learn from both its successes and challenges.
What are the impacts when a city like Minneapolis or perhaps in the future Seattle really brands itself on its parks in part by using this separate government agency as a taxing mechanism?
Exactly what's going to happen in Seattle, I mean, that's about Seattle. And so Seattle isn't going to be Minneapolis. But I think the really obvious advantage of going with a park district or the continual re-upping of a levy is that you have much greater ability to ensure equity among parks in your city, and that the cities that are relying increasingly on public-private partnerships are, I think, running into the significant risk of creating a two-tier park system. That's certainly something that we're struggling with right now here in New York City.
What happens when you get a two-tiered system and some parks are getting the benefits of a public-private partnership and others, perhaps in less desirable neighborhoods, are not?
Okay, I don't want to go and say that we have a two-tiered system in New York or anywhere else. I think, though, that it's a risk that has to be guarded against, watched, and that it is the job of advocacy organizations both parks advocacy organizations and social justice organizations in cities to watch it. I, in fact, spend a good deal of my professional life creating those public-private partnerships for the benefit of new urban space. And in places where you can, where the parks are likely to create value, I think it's a good way to fund parks. It's just we also need parks in low and moderate income neighborhoods, and we have to figure out ways to do it. What we're seeing here in New York is that by creating public-private partnerships, we actually free up some of the pressure on the Parks Department. So the Parks Department can then essentially stop investing in parks in communities of wealth and devote scarce resources almost entirely to low and moderate income neighborhoods. The question, though, is that sustainable over the long term? And I think the answer is probably no, and the solution that you're exploring quite worthwhile.
Candace Damon, a strategist who's helped cities around the U.S. create sustainable funding strategies for public space. She advised the Seattle Citizens Committee on this proposal that now goes to the Seattle City Council. They have until May 5th to amend it and approve it, and then we get a chance to vote in August. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.